Here we go, episode number 75. Time flies when you have fun. Are you interested to expand your business into Asian markets? Then this episode might be for you.
Yes. And also what's interesting or very lucrative in Singapore is that Singapore is the gateway to Southeast Asia.
In this episode, I'm talking with Lisa Stöger from GIN Austria. As program manager of the Global Incubator Network Austria, short GIN, Lisa Stöger has successfully connected the Austrian startup ecosystem with the world's most innovative startup hubs for the last 4 years. With a focus on Asian markets, she supports Austrian startups in their internationalization and market entry and introduces them to relevant international stakeholders. Since 2016, GIN, co-managed by AWS and FFG in Austria, has been the contact point for startups regarding expansion from Austria to Asia and vice versa. Over 300 startups have benefited from the customized GIN services and internationalization programs. With her interdisciplinary academic background in politics and economics in Vienna and York in the UK, Lisa is passionate about identifying cooperation potentials between international organizations and public institutions and is eager to apply these to promote startups and boost innovation. What are the topics we discuss in this episode? We cover 7 different ecosystems in Europe and in Asia: Austria, Israel, China, Hong Kong, Singapore, Japan, and South Korea. Enjoy the show. Welcome to a new episode of the Beginner's Mind podcast. Today, it's all about creating connections globally between Europe / Austria and Asia. And I'm very happy to have a very special guest here in this episode today. It's Lisa Stöger from GIN Austria.
Thank you very much. Hi, thank you very much, Christian, for the invitation. Happy to talk with you about global connections.
It's good to see you. The first time when I heard the Global Incubation Network Austria, which is the long form of GIN, for somehow reason, always James Bond pops up in my mind. I don't know why. The thing is, it was not GIN. I think his favorite drink was it martini steered
martini,
or something?
Martini, yes, exactly. Vodka and, martini, I guess.
And for some reason, GIN always reminds me on this vodka martini of James Bond. So every time when we talk, I'm a little bit in the James Bond mood. Can you give me background to why the Global Incubator Network selected this term GIN? I think it was not for associations with James Bond originally.
No, it wasn't, unfortunately, for all the James Bond fans. But yes, whenever I think of GIN, I always think about startups and internationalization. Mm. So the Global Incubator Network Austria, or as you said, GIN, was initiated already in 2015 by the Austrian federal government. And now, over the last 6 years, we connect the Austrian startup ecosystem with selected hotspots in Asia. So back then, there was identified a need and awareness of startup internationalization and that we want to support startup expansion. And as we have a special focus on Asia was because there are some initiatives already for startups to expand in Europe and then to the US market. And it's also the more common way that startups tend to expand further from Austria to Germany, then to Europe, other European markets like UK and then US. But Asia offers many potentials or many opportunities. And this is why we focus on the Asian markets.
Asia is a huge area. And we now moved from James Bond to the startup world, which is similar exciting like the movies. Can you describe a little bit more in detail in which areas of the Asian continent GIN is operating?
Yes, sure. So also maybe just upfront some details about GIN. So GIN is a program or network managed by the two main public funding agencies of Austria, which is the Austrian Promotional Bank, also known as Austria Wirtschaftsservice, AWS. And it is also managed by the Austrian Research Promotion Agency, Österreichische Forschungsförderungsgesellschaft. And we have a special focus on Asia, but we concentrate at the moment at 6 target regions, which are mainland China, Hong Kong, Singapore, South Korea, Japan, and also Israel. And with this target region, we work together. We have corporate partners over there, and we support startup exchange and startup internationalization. So on the one hand, Austrian startups are supported from us strategically and financially to internationalize to our GIN target regions in Asia, and also Asian startups from our target regions have the chance to internationalize to the European market towards Austria. So this is basically what we do.
That's great to hear. I always wondered during the pandemic, I mean, it was quite clear how business functioned globally before the pandemic. My life, it was mostly traveling, going to conferences, speaking to interested parties from all walks of life. And in March 2020, everything was put on hold. Let's put it that way. What was your perception with the Global Incubator Network of how the way people dealt with each other in business? How did that evolve in your network?
Yes, definitely. March 2020 was the beginning of a new era. And also now, let's say we still in the same in the same period of time, and it has developed to the new normal. Of course, we followed the COVID developments and the COVID pandemic already in Asia back then in December 2019. But who has thought that it will come over to Europe and the US and still affects the entire planet? But how has our network and our work has changed since then? So at first, everything was really shut down. So everything was more concentrated and focused on the individual things. So the exchange between our international partners in Asia was not that intense and regularly anymore. But it quickly started to continue after a few weeks. So back in summer 2020, we already were in contact and in touch with our international partners. And we had to adapt to the pandemic and to the new normal. So we had to adapt our services. So looking back over the last 2 years, it is thankfully quite astonishing that startup expansion is still going and is still working. So Austrian startups do not stop with their expansion plans. So they do want to expand to the Asian markets, although it is difficult to travel to Asia because of all the travel restrictions. But we can see that it still works without meeting people in person anymore, because everything is now on a digital basis and everyone meets virtually. So it still works, which is good.
Yeah, I think there are some upsides of the development. One is the acceptance of digital means of communication like Zoom. I mean, we are having our conversation now also on Zoom. Besides being in the same city. So it saves a whole lot of time. And I think it works very well for existing business relationships. So people who know each other for years, over years, learns that when they have the calls via Zoom, they don't need to move between places. So it saves As a minimum, I would say 1 to 2 hours travel time. And as a maximum, when I think back before March 2020, also went for lunches in London, which basically was one whole day gone. How did you perceive the development of business relations? I mean, what I always wondered was, is it possible via the digital world to create new connections, new business connections right from the start without ever meeting in real life? How did you see that with Jin?
With Jin, maybe we can also talk about this later on. So of course, the Asian markets, there are some cultural differences and also cultural business differences to against the European market. So there are some aspects where even virtual meetings and or digital meetings and creating new contacts and establishing new business contacts just on a virtual basis is not always as fruitful as we think or as we hope. So, and I think this is based on the cultural business differences, but we can talk about it a bit later. Why the digital world or how we have adapted to the pandemic consequences is that, first of all, there is no other way than if you cannot travel, if you cannot enter a country, then of course you have to do it online via Zoom and other call tools. And you can be much more efficient. So this is what I have experienced the most, that things are done way faster and in a way more efficient way, because you just set up a short call. You can call at any time. You don't have to travel. The meetings do have a purpose and make sense. So all the meetings that are not necessary have vanished and are now just email conversations or just other written communication. So you really want to make the most out of the meetings. So people concentrate on what is the purpose, what is the goal, what is the aim of the meeting, how do we want to work on in a partnership, in a business partnership. So this is definitely one of the positive aspects I've experienced.
Now, this is a key point. I read an article yesterday which is attributed to Elon Musk. His 7 rules of having meetings. And the first point was, always have an agenda, always have a purpose in the meeting, and don't invite too many people to the meeting. And this is exactly what you said. I think if this is probably one of the positive outcomes of the pandemic. When we look you mentioned these similarities and differences between the ecosystems in Austria versus Asia, and you mentioned a few countries that you're operating in, and I noticed on mainland China, Japan, South Korea, Hong Kong, interestingly, as a separate region, and Israel. I think these are different cultures that we're talking about, and maybe we go through each one separately. And let's start with Israel. Well, what I found interesting is that I associated Israel with Europe more than with Asia. And then you mentioned Israel belongs to Asia. How do you see the culture in Israel? Is it a great linking point between the European thinking and East Asia?
Yes, let's start with the closest region, which is, exactly, Israel. And I totally understand Israel is... Or maybe we can describe Israel as Euro-Asian market. Israel has, of course, a very interesting and also maybe sometimes not a very easy cultural background. So first of all, you have in Israel kind of like two words, the very historic, traditional Israeli ecosystem, and then the more modern international ecosystem. Israel as market is similar to the Austrian market, which is rather small, to be fair. But Israel is a great entry point to to expand globally. So most startups in Israel are in Israel to just expand globally. So all Israeli startups know that that Israel is too small to be active and to do business. So they are immediately working on their global expansion strategies. And of course, there's always one most important startup hub, and in Israel, it's Tel Aviv. And Tel Aviv has an enormous high number of startups and also a very high number of venture capital firms. So the VCs, there are so many VCs, and there is a lot of risk capital invested into Israeli startups because they definitely have the drive and the strategy to go immediately or as soon as possible global. So this is something which is quite interesting to follow in Israel. And they also have quite a high number of unicorns. I just looked it up. So I think they just had in 2021, 33 new unicorns just in 1 year, which is quite an impressive number. But looking back or comparing it to the Austrian, other European startup ecosystems, Israel is a market that's too small, but Israel is a very interesting market to learn and to go global from Israel.
While you were speaking, I tried looking up an article I wrote a couple of days ago that tackled the topic of the tremendous amount of unicorns that happened last year, and just didn't find it. You mentioned 33 unicorns came out of Israel alone. And we also had some successes here in Austria. I think Big Panda was one of the local unicorns, the local stars. And Israel and Austria have, I think, very much in common when you look at the size of the country, also in terms of natural resources. There is basically nothing there. And what I always was surprised, I mean, also in Austria, we don't have much, I think, like other countries or African countries. And what I always was surprised in Israel is this attitude of becoming successful and going global right after. It's good to hear that you perceive it the same way. And I think this is something that also Austrian startups can learn from. The Austrian market is very small. And if any startup wants to become successful, they have to think globally right from the start. I think it's a great learning point.
Exactly. Yes. Israel, maybe that's just a fun side note. Israel has its own Silicon Wadi, which is basically the component to the Silicon Valley, because they really have so many startups to support and help to expand globally on a very, very early stage on.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by the constant stream of dire climate news? Turn that concern into action. Tune in to the Climate Confident podcast every Wednesday morning when I bring you good news and real solutions from the front lines of climate action. Whether you're in business, tech, or just passionate about sustainability, the Climate Confident podcast is your weekly dose of optimism and inspiration. Subscribe to Climate Confident on your favorite podcast platform and start your Wednesday with hope and actionable insights.
Now it's an important mindset, how to become successful. Don't think local, act global immediately. And think also Europe. I mean, we have more in common with the other countries than there are differences. What you mentioned was Tel Aviv as a hub in Israel, as a startup hub. And I was smiling because I thought even Tel Aviv has this beautiful beach, and it always reminds me of Barcelona. And how can people work there? I mean, summertime, in spring. How is the work culture in Tel Aviv?
Yes, first of all, you have to be aware of the traditional or religious differences. So in Israel, you have the work The working week starts on Sunday. So they work from Sunday to Thursday because due to Shabbat on Friday, Friday and Saturday are non-working days. But international companies also tend to have a working time from Monday to Friday. So this is why I always say you have to differentiate between the two ecosystems. So on the one hand, you have the traditional one, and on the other hand, the more international one. So there are some companies, they only work have working hours from Sunday to Thursday, and then the other ones have the same as most over the world from Monday to Friday. So yeah, be aware of that. So, and if you're an international partner working with an Israeli company and you need something on Friday, it might be that you won't get any answer because it is only from Sunday to Thursday they're available. And in Tel Aviv, we also, so this is what we offer from JIN. So we have those internationalization programs called Go Asia and Go Austria. Go Asia is for all Austrian startups that want to internationalize to Asia. And Go Austria is for all Asian startups and Israeli startups that want to expand to Austria. So Go Tel Aviv is our program in Israel. And with Go Tel Aviv, we bring very early stage startups from Austria to Tel Aviv because we think that Tel Aviv has such an interesting innovation hub where international talent is shaped, that people are prepared what it really needs, what a good mindset is necessary to bring your startup, to make your startup successful on an international level.
The mindset is an important part. You mentioned Silicon Valley and if I got it right, Silicon Buddy in
Buddy, exactly.
In Tel Aviv. And a friend of mine who was in a podcast a couple of months ago also got the question, what's the uniqueness in the Silicon Valley mindset? And his answer was that whenever he talked with entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley, the first questions they ask is who's going to pay for the product or service. So they immediately think in terms of customer. And he said, when he talks with European entrepreneurs, one of the first questions they raise is, how does this comply to the GDPR rules? So this was his explanation to show the differences between the mindset. What's your opinion on the Silicon Valley or Silicon Valley mindset? How does it function?
How does the Silicon Valley mindset function? Of course, they are very ambitious. Otherwise, they wouldn't call, Israel wouldn't have a Silicon Valley or would name themselves to have a Silicon Valley. So they are definitely very ambitious. As I said, with the high number of VCs, there is a lot of risk capital that is available to invest into startups and also into startups at a very early stage on. So there is a lot of trust and ambition and just motivation to boost innovation and to trust into startups in general, which is in their mind needed to be successful and to be known on the international markets, also in comparison to others. And I think that their mindset is actually, even though they're such a small market as Austria is, they want to compete with the big markets. They don't see themselves as too small, and they don't see that they aren't able to compete in the highest ranks.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the ability to compete with other companies is not limited by the size of the country the company started in. So it doesn't really matter where people start from. Sometimes it's even better to have more hardship along the way because it shapes talent better than getting everything served. You mentioned the amount of venture capital that is available, and I found my article. I mean, Last year, globally, venture funding reached a record high of over $600 billion investment in companies in just 1 year. And Andreessen Horowitz raised lately $9 billion for their funds. And when I started in Europe in the life science startup ecosystem, it was in 2006. I mean, there was nothing close to that number. And I think in 2012 in Europe for all life science investments, the number was 8 billion. How do you perceive the availability of venture capital in 2022 as the Global Incubator Network?
I think also 2021 was in Austria definitely a very extraordinary year in terms of venture capital and startup fundraising and investment rounds. So we are also coming and know what we have to do as startup ecosystem. What we shouldn't forget is that in Austria we do have a lot of potential in pre-seed and seed financing. So we have very, very good public funding initiatives for pre-seed and seed financing. So just for instance, as the Austrian Promotional Bank has very good services for pre-seed and seed financing for startups. But I wish for Austria that we don't stop in startup support, so that we also concentrate on that we have to focus and support startups also in their later stages. Because sometimes it is not that easy for a startup to overcome or to go further after seed financing. And maybe we can focus on this a bit more.
I couldn't agree more. Austria is a great place. I mean, just talking about life science, Austria is a great place to start life science companies. Public funds are available and very helpful. It always worked extremely well since 2006. The only thing that I'm still missing here in Austria are later stage funds, because there are Series A funds, Series B funds. So for clinical development, I think we still have only two funds that are linked to Austria, or three funds that are linked to Austria. It's Hardial Ventures, Walter Stockinger, then Swellington Partner, Regina Hoditz, and also Christoph Langer, our Third Rock Ventures, although he operates out of the United States, has close ties to Austria. Do you see any movements here in Austria that more funds are started for later stage companies?
I see that there are definitely negotiations going on, and also more thought and more, how shall I say it? So more thoughts and more consideration about the startup ecosystem and how to support entrepreneurs, innovation in general. So I do believe there is much going on and there is much planned. So let's hope that they also there will be new initiatives arising from, and maybe other services coming from that.
I hope so. Banks, insurance companies, pension funds, get going and invest your money. We have now tackled two ecosystems, so the Austrian one and the Israeli ecosystem. Now to something completely different. The Asian ecosystem, so the real Asian ecosystem like China, Japan, and South Korea or Hong Kong. The story in life science I was explaining to scientific founders was start in Austria, make the first steps, get your proof of principle or proof of concept in preclinical development, and then you have to find funds elsewhere. Not in Austria, but maybe in Europe. And if you want to scale really big and want to build a pipeline, go to the United States. So this was basically the straightforward storytelling. China made a really interesting development over the last two decades. And since 2015, I saw a lot going on. Every time when I travel to China, to the Shanghai, Beijing, Hong Kong area, every city looked different. They built at hyperspeed buildings that I as a European could hardly imagine is possible. And I think also the startup ecosystem evolved and the venture capital systems evolved. Can you explain a little bit more what's going on in China and Hong Kong?
Yes. So mainland China is actually one of our newest target regions. So we started in 2019 to offer our Go Asia programs in mainland China, so which are Go Shanghai, Go Beijing, and Go Shenzhen. So these are the three cities we are working with. And then we have a separate Go Hong Kong. And as you said, yes, Hong Kong has a very special situation as it has this one country, two system regulation, and is definitely the gateway to mainland China. And as you said, China has it has changed a lot within the last 20, 30 years. I just want to give one example. So for instance, in Shenzhen, which was back in the 80s, it was a small fisherman's village. And now it is responsible for 80% of all hardware. So 80% of all hardware in the entire world is produced in and manufactured in Shenzhen. And this within 40 years. So this is very impressive. And China has also kind of similar to Israel, two systems. As it is a huge market, they have the Chinese ecosystem and the international ecosystem, which also means for startups, especially for Chinese startups. Chinese startups have, on the one hand, opportunities in the Chinese ecosystem. So they have the opportunities to raise and get Chinese capital. And on the other hand, they have also the opportunities for international capital and international opportunities in the international ecosystem. So we also have to split China into two ecosystems. And as we work with Shanghai and Beijing, primarily in mainland China, Shanghai is the biggest harbor in the world. So there it is. What do we aim for? We want to show startups that even though China might have a very difficult impression just because of the language is different, the alphabet is a different one, but we want to take the fear that even from Europe, you are able to be successful in China. And what is in general very important to know, in Asia, especially in mainland China, Austria is known, especially the brand Made in Austria. Made in Austria is very well known for good, high quality and also good and very, very good services. So employees from Austria are very well known for being taught and trained very well.
China is definitely an interesting economy. And I like the culture. So I'm training with the Shaolin monks. They have a subsidiary here in Bacher Park, close to my apartment. And I gave learning the language a try a couple of years ago. And no way I will ever learn that. I mean, they have more than 5,000 characters to use in writing. The language has... also, when they speak, they have... it sounds like singing, so they have different tones, more tones than the German and English language have. So when I think about business, it's very easy for Austrians. I mean, we start learning English in school, and to make up the difference, to at least understand American people and people in the United Kingdom is possible, and to mix and mingle with the locals. Chinese, in my opinion, is a different game. How do you perceive the chances for Austrians to really connect at a deep level with Chinese people in regard to the language barrier?
Yes, with regard to the language barrier, that is definitely a good concern. However, also with this, we do support. And so, for instance, if startups want to dive into the Chinese market and want to know whether their product and their service could work on the Chinese market with our Go Shanghai or Beijing program, they will get an insight into all the relevant topics. So business culture, language barriers. So we have a couple of German-speaking lawyers in mainland China with whom we're cooperating. So this is also something which is important in mainland China. Whenever you sign a business contract or whenever you have a cooperation agreement, it has always be in in Chinese at least. So only English contracts are not possible. This is why you always need to have a lawyer who, in the best case, understands both languages very well and is probably also best to have an international lawyer on board. So we do support with them. So this is something which is also different to other Asian markets, that in mainland China, you need to have a Chinese contract. What is also different is I'd like to say speed is king. And speed is definitely king in mainland China. So everything is moving very, very fast. So if you're interested in doing business in mainland China, make sure to do your homework, to do your research, make sure that you identify your competitors, identify your market size, your customers. And also, we might come to this a bit later, mainland China does work differently. So marketing and branding is completely different than in Austria, Europe, or even the US. So for it's just to give a very simple example, Facebook doesn't work in mainland China. So yes.
Is that really a problem?
No, it's not really a problem, but just in terms of social media, for instance, you have completely different platforms and especially as marketing is now working pretty much on social media or also much on social media channels. So this is something you just have to be aware of.
I think the Chinese government made an interesting move in helping first the local social media platforms to evolve before they let in the more evolved platforms from the United States. Europe did it differently. So China has now a social media platform similar in size to Facebook, YouTube, and all the other platforms that I forgot the names of them. Europe, I think we don't have any anymore. So China has some advantages in their approaches that they really also help their local companies evolving. You mentioned the language barrier, and the thought that popped up in my mind is, I mean, when we bring companies together in Europe, for example, German companies, Austrian companies, French companies, Spanish companies, and also work with Chinese companies, we then end up with contracts in 6 or 7 languages. Because also I think in Europe still, we have to have a local copy. So in German, in French, in Spanish, and all the other Eastern European languages. I hope in future we can simplify the process and agree on one language in business. It would make life, especially for startups, much simpler and much easier. Do you see also these language problems in negotiating then contracts that young startup companies with not much capital, who should focus on bringing the company forward, need immediately support from lawyers from 7-8 different countries?
As I said, in mainland China, you have to have a Chinese version. But in the other regions we are working with, so Hong Kong and Singapore, for instance, the business language is mainly English. And there it is totally fine to just have an English contract. So I think that Hong Kong and Singapore are way more advanced already in terms of agreements in English and having English just set as a business language.
That's good news. I think it's very helpful to just have one language in the contracts and also as a negotiation language than having several interpreters. Can we stay with Singapore? How is the ecosystem in Singapore?
Yes, Singapore is, it is known as a very technology advanced country, nation, and with its free economy. So it just has, I think it's the freest economy. It was Hong Kong quite long, but I think Singapore just was ranked first in 2021. So Singapore is not too big population-wise. So I think about 5 million people. But there is a lot of international talent there. And Singapore is special because it is so international. You have four different languages in Singapore, but pretty much everything works in English. It is known for having good talent in fintech, for instance. So in Singapore, you are in the most international market in Asia, to my mind. And as it's not too big, the ecosystem is quite similar to the Austrian one. So you always meet people you already know. So even though you think you're in a huge city, you will come across now and then the same people, which is actually quite funny because you always think, okay, it must be super busy and it might be hard to even connect with people, but especially in the startup community, at every event, you meet the same people.
There are some other advantages in Singapore. I just looked up the tax rate and the tax system. Singapore personal tax rate start at 0%, similar to Austria. I think also we have a 0% class and is capped at 22% above $320,000 for residents and a flat rate of 15 to 22% for non-residents. That's pretty much amazing.
It is, yes. It's tax-wise, it is very different and also very lucrative for startups. That's true, yes.
Yeah, no wonder that a lot of the digital ecosystems moved to Singapore. I always wondered why that is, and now I understand. I mean, 22% tax rate compared, I think also in the US, I think the highest tax rate is still 40, 45% something.
Yes. And also what's interesting or very lucrative in Singapore is that Singapore is the gateway to Southeast Asia, as it is also rather small, but it has such a strategic location. So from Singapore, you can have, you have Malaysia, Indonesia, you have the Philippines, you have so many markets just around the corner.
Markets and beautiful cultures and
exactly.
nice beaches. So it's definitely worth considering. Let's move on to the next ecosystem. You mentioned already Hong Kong. How is Hong Kong doing these days?
Hong Kong is population-wise similar to Singapore, I think with about 7 million people. It has also a strategic location in the Greater Bay Area. So it is definitely the gateway to mainland China. And yeah, Hong Kong, this is why I always separate between mainland China and Hong Kong, because Hong Kong is part of the Greater Bay Area. And then you have mainland China with Shanghai, Beijing, and then you have rest of China. In Hong Kong, you are also a bit more international because it is a more international nation. You have, I think they are also doing quite well with unicorns. I think they have 9 unicorns at the moment. And it is the second biggest harbor. It is one of the most important fintech hubs in Asia. So this is also why there are so many fintech startups in Hong Kong. We also offered a fintech startup program, Go Hong Kong and Singapore, back in 2020. because it was, we thought it might be interesting to have just fintech startups and showing them both ecosystems, as the fintech industry is growing over there and is in and is very interesting. What else can I say to Hong Kong? With Hong Kong, you always, Hong Kong is a good entry point in Asia. And from Hong Kong, you have a better chance to enter mainland China as well. So I suggest to always go first to Hong Kong and get an idea. And then you can further expand to mainland China. I think that's it's the easier way.
I think going to other ecosystems to get it straight doesn't mean you jump on an airplane and fly there for a weekend and then come back with 10 different contracts. I think it means opening an office. So really having a local representation and not just trying to build business here from Austria. Is that the right perception, that going to other ecosystems means creating subsidiaries?
Of course, this is the ultimate goal. So if you want to be globally successfully, of course, it would be great. Or this is the how you kind of like also measure a global success, to have your subsidiaries over there. With our Go Asia initiative, we want to give startups the first insights and to how just to get an impression of the market. Our programs last for about 1 week. And in this 1 week, startups have the chance to connect with the local startup ecosystem, with the local startup community in the new market, with pitch and networking events. They have the opportunity to already present themselves, the startups, to international VCs, investors, corporates, find new customers. We also organize individual business meetings for them, that they already have their first leads. And then it's up to the startups to do their homework, basically, to stay in contact, to find out and evaluate if a corporation makes sense. Many startups follow, or many startups try to have joint ventures, which is a good start at the beginning to have a local partner over there. And then in the next steps, they aim to have a subsidiary in the market as well.
Yeah, I think it's good for managing the expectations to describe the process as you did, that the Go region programs are for getting a first insight, to get to know the local partners, to start the first joint ventures afterwards, and then as a third step to create local representations, and not to go into a program with the expectation that everything is done after 1 week.
Yes, also maybe this is something you shouldn't, we shouldn't be too naive, although everything is working virtually very good as well. At some point, you need to be there as in person. So this is what we experienced after the 2 years of the pandemic. It is still necessary to be there, especially if you really want to enter a cooperation agreement with an international partner. You can discuss everything in calls, even though in video calls, but at some point you need to be there in person before you really enter a new cooperation, if you have to sign a contract. So it is good to be on site in the end, and because then you just get a better feeling.
I think my recommendation is always to have a little bit of a thought process before trying to enter a country, if this is really something that the founders are keen of pursuing for at least a decade. So in the end, if these first business trips are successful, it really means that the founders have to travel back and forth for the next 10 to 20 years if they want to build the company between these two regions. And it doesn't mean traveling, doesn't mean going there for a weekend trip. It sometimes means staying there for 1 or 2 months or 6 months a year. Is this also still a valid assumption, a business assumption, before entering a country, that also with the pandemic and after the pandemic, local representations and being also as a founder or executive of a company, very often in the local market, does matter?
I think you can do a lot already in advance. So if you have done your research very thoroughly, then the most important part is done. So really identify your competitors if your solution is on the new market as well already. Does your solution work the same way? Do you need to have adapted because the customers are different? So your target group act differently can be true or can be very likely be you. Let's put it this way. And if you have done everything of that, then make sure that you have enough time and also resources to focus on your expansion plan. So just, you cannot, because once you're in the new market and you have connected with new people and new partners, you have to focus on them also further on, and you have to continue to be in contact with them, because only new corporations will come to a positive result and solution if you're focusing on that. So don't have the impression of you join one of our Go Asia programs and you be there and you are interested in entering this new market, then, and you have made your contacts, then you have to stay in contact with your new connections. This is something, this is one of my advice to everyone who wants to expand to a new market.
I couldn't agree more. It reminds me of my first job after graduating in merger acquisition. And I was responsible for Eastern European countries. And I tried to manage everything via email and telephone from the Viennese office. And my boss back then, every day she checked into my office and asked for them, what are you doing in the office? I say, yeah, everything is running fine. And I get emails, we have nice phone calls, and they always say everything is fine. And she grinned and said, yeah, good luck with that. And after a week, I understood what she meant. Being in an international company means that just picking up the phone and having a phone call isn't enough. So it's always necessary to meet people in person and to understand what problems they have and to help them solving the problems. So this is, I think, still valid 20 years later in the digital world. And it's good to hear that human beings are still the same, and that internationalization means traveling and meeting people. And I hope we can do that soon. Let's move on to the next ecosystem. When it comes to traveling, it's also a very beautiful country, Japan. How is the startup ecosystem in Japan?
Yes, Japan, very beautiful market, a beautiful country, and very interesting market as well. Japan is maybe cultural-wise or business cultural-wise different to Hong Kong and Singapore. So when we, or how can we kind of like summarize all the Go Asia markets, is that Singapore and Hong Kong is definitely easier in terms of that culture, business culture is similar to Western countries. In Japan, you have also a language barrier. So Japanese is mostly spoken also in business meetings. So it's always good to have a translator on board in Japan. And yes, and don't be surprised if people don't speak English. Of course, in the startup ecosystem over there, especially international startups, young people are of course able to speak in English. I don't want to give you a wrong picture of Japan, but it might be that older people might not speak as good English as you wanted them to have. And in Japan, you have Austria is also very well known, especially because of Austria's culture and music. So Japan are really fans of Austria and the Austrian culture and its music. So this is a positive aspect. And also industry-wise, they're very advanced in robotics and also kind of like, and they're also very into Austrian health care or health tech technologies. So here you can also have, you also have the Made in Austria as a very good brand, that it means high quality.
I totally agree. Japan has a very interesting culture, and I think it's always a good advice to respect the local culture when entering a country and get some training beforehand, especially when it comes to Japan. The Japanese language, I perceive as if somebody really wants to move to Japan, talking and understanding Japanese is possible. It's easier than Chinese language. Writing is pretty much the same problem. So I think it takes about 10 years minimum of daily practice to being able to read a newspaper that is similar to, let's say, Kronen Zeitung or Sun in Europe. It's very challenging. It's very difficult. But Japan is one of the safest countries of the world, in my opinion.
Yes.
Crimes basically don't exist there. And this is a great thing, just to walk around everywhere and without having to fear that something happens. So there is a lot of upside in the Japanese culture.
It is also, it has one of the highest, one of the oldest populations. So also age-wise, Japanese people are very healthy, I guess.
Good food, healthy lifestyle. So
exactly, yeah.
You can learn a lot from Japan.
Yes, and it also has very fun gadgets. So you get you have so many different, maybe some very funny things you probably wouldn't think of that you have to have such things in Austria. So for instance, you have lockers for umbrellas at train stations.
Yeah, but not only in Japan, I think also in Shanghai, also in Hong Kong. Every time when I traveled to this region in Asia, it felt like a trip to the future. So
yes.
When I compare it here with Yen, I always thought, I mean, Europe is advanced in the United States, but I still think that the Chinese East Coast, Japan, Singapore, Hong Kong, South Korea, are 10 years in the future. So when anybody who wants to experience future technology, take a trip to Asia. And this brings us to, I think it's the last country that you mentioned at the beginning on the list. It's South Korea. And South Korea is also amazing. I was not very often there, but the first time I traveled to South Korea, when we had a bus ride from the airport to the city center, I asked the question, okay, where does the city end and the countryside begin? And people said, well, basically South Korea is one big city. It's 50 million people, I think, living on the same area than Austria has. In Austria, we have 9 million people. How do you perceive South Korea?
Yes, that's a good description that South Korea is one big city. Yes, from Seoul, capital city Seoul definitely is the place to be if you want to enter the Korean market. And yes, you can be in different cities very quickly. So it is just a 3 hours drive, and you're already at the border of the other already in the border of the country. So Seoul is very innovative and interesting. It has, similar to mainland China, for instance, also its own social media apps. So for instance, they don't use Google Maps, they use Line instead. And they also have Kakao app, which is a communication tool like WhatsApp. And also you can order everything. So online shopping is done on Kakao. And the same is for Line, which is the Korean Google Maps. So they have different apps, for instance. Of course, the language, they also have there's a language barrier. It is in business meetings. It might be that people are speaking Korean all the time. And what is interesting, what I haven't mentioned yet, in Korea, for instance, it is also important to trust your business partners and that you are very respectful. So in terms of international business meetings, Koreans are very, very polite, a bit reserved, because they always want to make sure that the guest has its absolute best time and is treated very, very well. So you have to adapt to this business culture, that you let them open the door for you. You have to let them giving you presents, and you always agree with everything and be thankful for everything. And this is how you show them also the respect. And also in terms of like how you hand over business cards, it's not only in Korean the way, but you always give business cards with two hands. Never exchange business cards only with one hand, and always read the business card thoroughly and take your time. So this is something in Asia in general is different.
I think this is something everybody in the world can learn from Asian countries, being respectful with business partners mm-hmm. and people in general. It helps also in other regions of the world. And the countries that you mentioned, Japan and South Korea, and also the Chinese East Coast, stand out in treating people very respectfully.
Exactly. Yes. So that's definitely one of the main differences in the business culture. Also, it is a C-level market, which means in business meetings, or if you're interested in expanding to a new market, make sure that it's either the CEO, the COO, or the chief of the sales department. So you cannot just bring a marketing manager to the meeting, because also in the meetings in Asia, also especially in South Korea, there won't be sitting any sales manager there. It will be the CEO. So this is why it's also important. So it is a C-level market. This might be also a good and interesting aspect you need to know. And South Korea, in comparison to all the other markets we have discussed today, has a completely different COVID strategy. So we were able to travel to South Korea in 2021, just in November. So we were there with 6 startups already, because South Korea has the strategy similar to Europe to adapt to the pandemic and to work life through with infection cases. And in comparison to mainland China, for instance, or Japan even, and Singapore and Hong Kong, they have very strict travel restrictions. So I'm curious how those restrictions will change in 2022. But for everyone who needs to be in South Korea for business purposes, it is possible to enter South Korea.
Yeah, possible, but I think they still have a lot of restrictions, things they do internally, which are highly advanced. I think one is the attitude of the South Korean population. So everybody who's feeling sick stays home. Mm-hmm. So sick means not high fever. It means sneezing or feeling exactly. like having a cold, which also in China and in Japan is the signal for everybody to just stay home and don't mm-hmm. work, don't go out. And also what I saw in Seoul was that they measure body temperature quite frequently and quite often, like elevators, for example, that elevators mm-hmm. don't open when the technology behind it perceives a guest as having high fever. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of measures that help to prevent the spread of viruses. Is it still the same?
It is still the same, exactly. So pretty much every time you enter a shop, a restaurant, whatever, a hotel, an office, your temperature is measured. That's true. And in general, I guess Asian people tend to be, I can't say Asian people, people from the Jin target regions, so from the Asian markets we discussed, people are following kind of like rules and are also aware of the society in general and the others. So as you said, if you feel sick, you stay at home or you wear a mask. I mean, at the moment in South Korea, you wear your mask all the time. But even before the pandemic, people wore their mask already if they just had a cold in winter, to be polite and respectful towards the others. So this is something in general I really appreciate from their business cultures, that business meetings are very respectful. You have to show them respect as well. And if you do, there is commitment and there is trust and there is also support, and they want to have, and then they are also aiming to, or they aim to continue the cooperation and to continue the collaboration. And they will also be eager that there are fruitful results.
Yeah, this is, I think, the main point from this conversation. Anybody who's interested in dealing with Asian cultures and Asian people, learn about the culture, respect the culture, and then everything is fine. Everything works out fine. And of course, I think also Asian people understand that their cultures are usually very unique, and for Europeans, sometimes hard to and difficult to understand, which is not a problem as long as travelers or business people from other countries show that they make at least an effort to learn how things work there, and then everything is open and it's great. One final question from my end. I think we have all regions that Jin is operating in discussed, and maybe one or the other listener in the audience is inspired to try setting up business with Asian countries. I think generating visions and big ideas and big plans and glorious future is nature of every entrepreneur. Where people sometimes struggle is the first proper step into a new direction. What's your advice to entrepreneurs, startup entrepreneurs who want to enter Asian markets? What is the best first step to get things going?
The best first step is joining the Jin network. So this is exactly why Jin exists and why our services exist. We want to help at this first proper step. However, what can you do in advance? Make sure expanding to a new market, especially a new market overseas. So it is either it's the US market or it's the Asian markets. Expansion means time and requires a lot of resources, people's resources, time resources, and also sometimes financial resources. So you cannot expand to a new market quickly and just introduce and just involving and including them into your normal daily business. You really have to have the people and the time who are focusing on the expansion to the new market. And how we support you, we help you in the first steps, that you find the direction where you need to go, which people or which connections you need to have. And we are helping with that. So if you have the resources and the time, come to the Jin network, benefit from our services, and then you receive the first contacts. You will learn the most important authorities and institutions you need to know, and you need to contact before you start your expansion.
That's great advice, Lisa. Is there any question open that you would like me to ask at the end that I've missed in the conversation?
I think that maybe why Asia again? So I think the Asian markets have a lot of potential. So you don't have to, you should not underestimate the Asian markets, and you shouldn't be too afraid of the barriers. The most popular barrier, which is always mentioned by startups, is the language barrier. But you shouldn't be afraid of that, because we have, on the one hand, the support. There is on-site support through Austrian lawyers, Austrian consultants, and also, especially in the startup community, thankfully, everything is very international anyway. So don't be afraid, and always think globally from the first moment on. So don't start the traditional way from Austria to Germany, to the UK, to the US. Start thinking globally from the first moment on.
That's great advice. Lisa, thank you very much for these insights into the Asian market and the present conversation. I wish you and your team all the best for 2022.
Thank you very much, Christian, for the invitation, and all the best for 2022 for you too.
Have a great day. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Please share the podcast and make sure you've subscribed. Have a great day.